To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more as we continue in our exploration into the foul malignity of the Death Guard. We are all far too well aware of the dreadful traitor legions who turned their backs upon the Emperor during the calamitous days of the Horus Heresy. But perhaps, above all others, it would be the sons of Barbarus who have left the most fetid scar upon the galaxy. Corrupted and tainted by the nefarious powers of the Dark Gods, the formerly named Dusk Raiders now stride as the benefactors of Grandfather Nurgle, bequeathing his gifts of pestilent plague to all who will hear his call, whether willing or not. If left unchecked, then sooner or later they will contaminate the entire cosmos, drowning the stars in a putrid swamp of raw, unbridled sickness. And on that day, the great belfries and campaniles of the plague planet will ring out, echoing through a desolate realm, utterly ruled by the Lord of Decay. But this was not always their aspiration. At one time, the 14th Legion, led by the Pale King Mortarion, were loyal, albeit reluctant servants to the young Imperium. But as we will soon learn, their destinies were stolen away from them and corrupted by the malicious Herald of Nurgle, an Astartes captain by the name of Callus Typhon. In our prior sermon, we investigated the origins of the Primarch Mortarion, learning of his lamentable upbringing upon the feral world of Barbarus, and of the human uprising which he led against their malevolent alien masters, named as the Overlords. His final victory against his adoptive father and ruler of Barbarus, a Xeno known as Necere, was ultimately pried from his grips, as it was none other than the Emperor himself who swept in at that most climactic moment to rob him of finally achieving vengeance. Since that day, Mortarion has stood as the reluctant and vicious Primarch of the Dusk Raiders, renaming them as the Death Guard, from where he had arose into a position of infamy for leading his Marines into brutal, near unwinnable wars, caring not for the amassed losses of his genetic progeny. But now, our story must once again resume. We find ourselves now within the 31st millennium. The magnificent fleets of the Great Crusade are still flowing outwards through the cosmos, claiming each and every world for the glory of all mankind, and the various legions of the Astartes would carry the meek citizens of humanity out into the void upon wings of blazing fire. In time, this wave of golden prosperity would come to a crashing halt, and in its wake, the capricious whispers of chaos would pervade the ignorant minds of the young demigods. But as we will now investigate, perhaps there were none worse affected than by the legion of the Death Guard. Mankind was at war. The ascension of the Emperor and his unification of Terra were still but a recent memory, yet during this time none could afford to linger within the past. His 20 great legions, led by the newly recovered Primarchs, were carving a bloody swathe throughout the stars, labeling the various sentient species of the galaxy as being eternal enemies to all of humanity. And thus, they were to be purged in the flames of this new age. Within the crusading fleets, we will now return to the Death Lord himself, Mortarion. By his word, the Legion of the Death Guard had been almost entirely purged of its Terran recruits, leaving only the Barbaran natives of his homeworld as his genetically ascended kin. These men had fought side by side with the demigod against the overlords, raging through the dark to finally attain freedom from the nefarious yoke of Xenos oppression. But even with their liberation, time would never heal the wounds received upon Barbarus, They had been forged in the inky gloom of eternal night, where every dim shadow could have been cast by an abductive alien, ready to steal their families away into the murky dark. Thus, many of their kind held a particularly dour, pessimistic attitude towards outsiders, primarily caring for little beyond the perseverance of their own. Their bodies, meanwhile, had been racked by the toxic environment of their homes. Barbarous had been awash with pestilent gases, eating through the lungs and exposed skins of those who would venture out into the wastelands unprotected. Over the years, however, the hardy humans had become somewhat adapted to this nightmare. And as a result of this, their legion could be reliably deployed within the most hazardous war zones of the galaxy, as it was doubtful that they would ever encounter a planet which was as dangerous as their old home. But with these stout marines, Mortarion was tasked with conquering the stars, and he did so with a sense of relentless tenacity. He cared not for the losses sustained by his troops, willingly engaging them in truly brutal wars of attrition, carelessly allowing for thousands of Astartes to die in the blasted muck if it resulted in a Pyrrhic victory. With that being said, he still trusted in the abilities of his men, and perhaps he simply expected too much from the children of Barbarous. There were to be few specialized squads within his armies, instead choosing to equip all within the Death Guard with a wide range of tactical equipment so that all of his marines would be able to perform most duties if a new situation arose. Similarly, due to his propensity to deploy his legion as a vast phalanx of footbound troops, many were to be entombed within suits of Terminator armor, simply to enhance their durability when in the face of danger. Though they had taken it upon themselves to delve into the most arduous of battlefields, their actions had earned them little respect from their cousin legions. As a stark example of this, upon a wayward battlefield where both the Death Guard and Blood Angels were deployed, one of the 14th Legion, known as Vorks, became all too well aware that the wider Imperium saw Mortarion as a foul outcast. The Blood Angel, named as Camanio, upon seeing the Pale King, surrounded by his Death Shroud Terminators, muttered under his breath that he could not believe that any would willingly follow this wretch of skin and bones. But this did not dissuade the children of Barbarous. Though scorned, they themselves did not alter their methods nor attitudes to garner the favors of Astartes, who cared more for their outward appearance over their own combat effectiveness. As such, the Death Guard did not shy away from their use of alchemical or radioactive weaponry, which undoubtedly marred their reputation when compared to some of the more traditional of legions. Yet, none within the 14th saw this as dishonorable. Mortarion himself held no hesitation towards unleashing pernicious poisons upon a world, and since his marines held an innate tolerance towards toxins in all forms, it simply served to hasten their inevitable conquests and victories. Unsurprisingly, during the Great Crusade, Mortarion failed to find kinship with his fellow Primarchs. Aside from the fact that he cared little for their support or companionship, many of his brothers saw him as an insular figure who failed to personify the glorious essence of mankind, and instead, they considered him as an offensive dreg of a blasted world. Perturabo of the Iron Warriors and Lionel Johnson of the Dark Angels actively sought to shun and exclude the Pale King from combined operations. Meanwhile, Corvus Corax of the Raven Guard and Rabut Gilliman of the Ultramarines were said to have warned the Emperor that the Child of Barbarous was not to be trusted, as they both doubted as to whether or not he truly held his loyalties to the Imperium. These were ultimately dismissed by their progenital lord, and yet, in time, the suspicious claims of these Primarchs would soon be proven as correct. With this being said, Mortarion did find some form of brotherhood with both Horus and with Conrad Kurz, perhaps because he saw some small essence of himself within these two fellows. Whilst many of the various legions of the Astartes had embraced the psychic gifts of humanity, promoting a select few of their members to the position of librarian, Mortarion was not so amicable to their otherworldly abilities. He equated those who held warp sensitivity to the foul charnel lords of Barbarus, who were well known to channel their powers of witchcraft to abuse and oppress the meek humans who dwelled within their dark canyons. Thus, he destroyed the title of librarian within his legion, caring not for the benefits they may bring, as they only reminded him of the malign secrets held by the old overlords. As a result of his disdain towards the witches, he naturally felt a sense of revulsion towards the Lord of the Thousand Suns, Magnus the Red. During the Council of Nicaea, where the future of the Astartes Psychers was to be determined, Mortarion was the first to vehemently speak out in disgust at the inclusion of psionic occultists within their legions. Similarly, upon discovering the partially constructed golden throne upon Terra and learning of its intended purpose, Mortarion could only lash out in rage, seizing Malkador the Sigillite by the throat, choking him as a simple display of his powers over those who considered themselves as psychers. Whilst I would love to share many of the harsh, backbreaking conflicts of the Death Guard during the Great Crusade, rather unfortunately, the Imperium would constantly neglect the achievements of the Barbaran Legion. Their methods of war, whilst effective, would never be seen by the wider Imperium as being honorable or heroic, as instead they would simply hear tales of a grim marching line of deathly warriors emerging through clouds of toxic smoke to relentlessly slaughter all they could find, leaving not a single survivor to tell of their tale. Thus, Mortarion and his Death Guard had been relegated to a position where they were almost considered as expendable shock troops. The beloved legions of the Blood Angels or of the Emperor's Children would never be considered for the conflicts in which the Death Guard excelled. And so, they were forced to silently carry out their duties, slowly growing in disgust towards their post. Though they had indeed been freed from the overlords of Barbarus, it now seemed that their oppression had simply been resumed by another master. The Emperor and his legions cared not for the discontent of the Death Guard, and hence the first sparks of betrayal began to stir. At this point in our tale, the Great Crusade was nearing its end. The colossal expeditionary fleets had stretched out to reach the farthest stars of our galaxy. Immense alien empires had been toppled, and Horus stood as the undisputed war master to the surviving 18 legions. This was supposed to be the dawning of a new golden age for humanity, but as the crashing wave of the Crusade reached its final boundaries and retracted back, it seemed that this was instead to be a time for a new galactic war. Horus Lupercal, Primarch to the Lunar Wolves and hero known far and wide to the citizens of the Imperium, had strayed from the Emperor's light. He had fallen as a victim to a grand scheme plotted by the Dark Apostle named as Erebus, from where he had emerged as a scion to the Dark Gods, with a new goal of ultimately overthrowing the Emperor and plunging the galaxy into flames. But Horus could not achieve this most lofty endeavor alone. He knew that he would require the allegiances of his brothers, and in seeing how poorly many of the fellow Primarchs had been treated, he began to orchestrate what was to be the grandest of betrayals seen in human history. Many of his kin were relatively easy to convert to the ways of chaos. Angron, Lord of the Red Sands, was already on the cusp of his own rebellion after the Emperor had dispatched Leman Russ to put a stop to the further implantations of butcher's nails within the brains of his marines. Thus, Horus simply offered him exactly what he desired, and that was to be free from the uncaring oppression of his father. Fulgrim, the Phoenician of the Emperor's children, was suffering from the slow corruption of a chaotic entity found within the silver blade of the Lair. And so this perfected son was similarly easy to sway to the War Master's cause. When Horus eventually came to Mortarion, however, he found his task somewhat more challenging. The Pale King already harbored a deep animosity towards the Emperor for his actions during his youth, and yet he still stood opposed, resolute against the War Master's ideals. That was until Horus finally mentioned the clear link between their gene father and of the warp. He understood that the Lord of Death despised any mention of witchcraft, and so he fully exploited this terrible fear. Horus compared the Emperor to the overlords of Barbarus, claiming that he was simply a warp-tainted aberration who had delved into the Immaterium to grow drunk on its powers, allowing him to create the very genome of the Primarchs themselves. This perturbed Mortarion to no end. Though, yes, he already held some distrust towards his true father, this revelation that the Emperor may have become corrupted by the same forces who pervaded the minds of the overlords was simply too much to ignore. And so, with this, he threw in his scythe with the growing legions of Horus and pledged himself to overthrow the Emperor once and for all. At this point, the wider Imperium was ignorant to the growing threat of the War Master, but the newly labeled traitor legions would make their presence known to all, and Mortarion would have a central role to play in this most heinous act. It would be upon the world of Istvan III, where the first shots of the Horus heresy were levied, and from this point, there could be no redemption for the souls of the turncoat marines. The planet was already suffering under a rebellious governor by the name of Vardus Prahl, who had declared independence from the wider Imperium, and as such, the Emperor himself had ordered the War Master to quell this uprising, unbeknownst to the havoc which would soon be wrought. Horus assembled his own legion, the World Eaters, the Emperor's Children, and the Death Guard to maintain orbit around this wayward world. Yet, they would not all be deployed to its surface. Understanding that not everyone within their ranks would aid in the coming rebellion, each Primarch ordered for the Marines who were unshakable in their faith to the Imperium to make up the first assault wave. The remaining turncoats, however, who had pledged themselves to Horus, would bide their time in orbit, awaiting for the precise moment to strike and purge their legions of the blind fools. It was only once the uprising of Vardus Prahl had been crushed that Horus unleashed his arms and his heresy truly began. As the loyalist forces regrouped, intent on returning to their ships, they were not met with the expected transports, and instead they saw the first salvos of a tremendous orbital bombardment careening down towards them. These were not mere explosives, as they had been equipped with great virus bombs, which upon impact chewed through the armor, flesh, and bone of the faithful Marines in but a single moment. Thousands died, falling as a pool of acidic sludge, melting into the very ashen ground itself. But the traitor's plan was not entirely successful. A member of the Emperor's children, named as Saul Tarvitz, had warned the ground forces of this attack, prompting them to seek shelter in vast underground bunkers from where the apocalyptic blasts could not reach them. But by this point, the survivors were simply too small in number to pose any significant threat to the newly formed heresy. I will not tell of the full course of events of this battle, nor of the flight of Nathaniel Garo within the Eisenstein, as it does not pertain to Mortarion directly. But in brief, the traitor forces were ultimately successful in crushing the majority of the vestigial remains of the Loyalists, at which point their fleets departed, setting their course to the world of Istvan V. Word of this grand betrayal was quick to reach Terra, prompting the Primarch Rogel Dorn to deploy the entire roster of seven great legions to bring this uprising to a swift and bloody end. It would fall to the Iron Hands, Salamanders, Iron Warriors, Alpha Legion, Word Bearers, Night Lords, and of the Raven Guard to take this honor. Yet, it seemed as though this plan had been rigged from the start. Horus, ever a master of strategy, knew of exactly how this conflict would go. Unbeknownst to Rogel Dorn, four of the legions which he had sent had already pledged their secret allegiance to the heresy, and from their might would they devastate the Loyalist Three. The plan, firstly, was to construct a fortified location from where the outward traitor legions who had committed their betrayal upon Istvan III would defend. Secondly, the Loyalist legions of the Iron Hands, Salamanders, and Raven Guard would land to attack, whilst the remaining legions of the Iron Warriors, Alpha Legion, Word Bearers, and Night Lords would position themselves in the rear under the guise of acting as reinforcements. Upon the War Master's command, the supporting legions would soon reveal their true allegiances, and the ignorant scions of the Imperium would be made all too well aware of their fatal folly. If all went according to his plan, then the Loyalists would be caught in a crossfire between the eight traitor legions of the galaxy, utterly exterminating the faithful fools and crippling the military potential of the Imperium. Tragically, this is exactly how the conflict transpired. It was nothing short of a massacre. Tens of thousands of Marines died with each passing hour as the sheer weight of ordnance crushed their power-armored frames down into the muck, where they would be lost and forgotten to all. Mortarion himself, Lord of Death, led his traitor legion to great effect during this battle. With each deft slice of his colossal scythe, entire groups of panicked Loyalists were cleaved in twain, whilst the silent, grim soldiers of the 14th simply advanced in unison, caring not for their own losses, as they crippled and eventually exterminated all who had come to face them. As the traitor forces departed, leaving a wasteland of broken, bloody corpses, the fleets engaged their engines, setting out into the inky depths of space, from where they only held ill intentions for the remaining Loyalists, who foolishly stood against them. During their journey, however, Horus had entrusted Mortarion and the wider Death Guard with a series of vitally important tasks. The Pale King split his fleet, taking a smaller splinter force towards Prospero in the hopes that he would be able to sway the warhawk Jagatai Khan to join in the cause of the traitors. The larger bulk of the Death Guard, however, were to be led by the first captain Kallus Typhon, who would wage a stellar war against the divided legion of the Dark Angels. I should note here that the man named as Typhon was not seen by Mortarion as being a mere marine, as instead he was perhaps the first friend he had ever had. After fleeing from the mountaintops of the Overlords, descending into the dark valleys of Barbarus, it was the young Typhon who first encountered the wayward Primarch, bringing him into the fold of a forlorn human settlement found within the shadow of a valley. Here, he told him of the comforting songs which his meek kind would sing around dying embers, a most welcome alternative to the brutal dirges and lamentable chants of his adoptive father. Through the course of their rebellion, it was Typhon who stood resolute at the side of this mysterious demigod, often speaking out in opposition to the Primarch's plans. And yet, as time would soon tell, their brotherhood was to be forged in the flames of war, earning him the hard-fought respect of the Pale King. Beyond all others, Mortarion believed that if any could be trusted to lead the Death Guard in his stead, that it could only be Typhon to take up this thankless duty. And yet, when two brothers are strayed from one another for too long, then even the greatest of friendships will be put to the test. But regardless, Typhon was a trusted ally, and he could not dally on nostalgic memories of their calamitous upbringing. He was now to converse with his true blood brother, and once the long voyage of the Primarch came to its end, he would have to put his oratory skills to the test, to sway the great Warhawk to Horus's cause. As Mortarion arrived within the Prospero system, even though he was indeed mighty, he was not able to persuade his distant brother. Perhaps it was due to his loathsome appearance and generally sickly demeanor, but he was rebuked by the child of Chogoris, who engaged the Pale King in a duel to the death. Though fervent in their attacks, neither were successful in claiming victory, prompting Mortarion to retreat back to his fleet, although this would not be the final time that the Great Khan and the Reaper of Men would clash blades. Taking his defeat on the chin, the Pale King at this point personally led his splinter fleet through a series of purges upon the still loyalist worlds which surrounded Prospero. However, during one pivotal engagement, he received a truly life-changing revelation. Within an isolated chamber, he was met with a writhing demon of the warp, who had possessed a meek imperial citizen as their chosen host. After much provocation from this never-born horror, he at long last summoned his own psychic powers, rending this demon from reality, banishing it back to the hellscape of the warp, where it would remain forevermore. He had expected such an action to break him. As for his entire life, he had despised the witchcraft of those who dive and plumb the depths of the immaterium, but instead, he felt nothing. From this ennui, relief blossomed forth. He realized that he could indeed wrangle control of the warp and endure its innate temptations. And so, from this moment, he pledged to abandon his prior fears and conquer the powers of the warp itself. To be clear on this point, he had not given himself over to the ways of witchery, as instead he simply believed that he would be able to grow to a point where the entities of that dimension could no longer pose any threat, freeing him from the mental shackles of skepticism that had held him his entire life. His brother Primarx, however, clearly did not feel the same trepidation towards the warp as he. Mortarion would struggle to hide his disgust and revulsion towards those who had embraced chaos and ascended as demon princes, such as with Fulgrim or Angron. But he would never fall for the same tricks of the warp. The Pale King would remain as a mortal man, leading his legion as an exemplar to the strengths of flesh, standing as a durable beacon of hope against the backdrop of the warp-tainted masses. Whilst Mortarion was expanding his horizons, keeping an open mind as though he were a fortress with its gates unbarred and unguarded, Callus Typhon was busy leading the bulk of the Death Guard on a brutal campaign against the Dark Angels, aside from generally causing havoc and misery amidst the ranks of the First Legion, he had taken up a self-ordained mission whilst within the Perditus system. He sought to claim the ancient artifact named as the Tuchulcha engine, which according to storied legend had originally been constructed by the fabled race of the Old Ones. Supposedly, when brought together with two other relics known as the Ouroboros and the Plague Heart, the trio would allow one to effortlessly and almost instantaneously traverse the hellscape of the warp by creating isolated bridges through the immaterium within which time itself would slow. Whilst he was ultimately unsuccessful, being driven away by Lionel Johnson himself, he found refuge with the duplicitous Astartes known as Luther, who was more than happy to shield the heretics from his own parental legion. But returning to Mortarion, he had been summoned by Horus to aid him in a coming conflict upon the world of Moloch. Yet he had one important mission to achieve before committing himself to battle. Within the vast gene labs found in the depths of his flagship, he had done what many would consider unthinkable, in slaying all seven of his personal Death Shroud bodyguards where they stood. Here, he permitted the flowing tides of the warp to channel themselves through the gore, and from the grisly remains of his companions arose his departed champion, a long dead marine known as Ignatius Grulgor. He had once been a captain who originally fell upon the soils of Istvan III, but now, resurrected through the occult gifts of the warp, he was to walk once more as a diseased effigy of pestilence, now named as the Eater of Lives. This rotten exemplar of death, revived to this plane of reality, once more swore an oath of fealty to Mortarion and none else. And yet, could the Primarch truly trust this figure who had so clearly been tainted by the grasps of witchery? After witnessing the pestilent devastation carried by the corrupted Grulgor upon the world of Moloch, Mortarion retrieved and ultimately contained the possessed marine within a fortified structure aboard his own flagship, where he would be left to simply wait, stewing in his own fetid mess. From this point on, Mortarion only grew more confident in his abilities to contain the horrors of the warp, from where in desperate times they could be used to his own advantage. Though still wary and suspicious of the immaterium, he held far fewer reservations behind its study, resulting in him amassing a large collection of corrupted artifacts. Yet he still believed himself to hold a strong enough constitution to withstand their tainted presence. This was primarily kept as a personal matter, however, and the wider Legion was still heavily dissuaded from straying down the dark path of their fellow heretics. All were to remember their vows, and the Death Guard were to stand as proof that the Great War could still be won purely through the strengths found in their own mortal flesh. But at this point, Mortarion had been once again tasked by Horus to hunt down the White Scars and to clear his record of failure against the swift might of the Warhawk. Thus, with a combined fleet of the Death Guard and Emperor's children, his heretical assemblage departed to the seething immaterial scar known as the Catalus Rift. Emboldened by the flames of vengeance, he boarded the White Scar's flagship of the Swordstorm, seeking to finally claim the head of the Khan. Yet, aboard this craft, he was met with silence. Unbeknownst to the traitors, Jagatai had teleported away to a distant battleship, leaving a most brilliant trap for the Pale King. The reactor core of the Swordstorm had been set to blow, and a small contingent of the veteran Sagyar Mazan had been left to harry the Death Guard, hoping to delay them long enough for their entire deployment to be wiped out in the imminent blast. This may have worked against a lesser opponent, but we must remember that Mortarion was a Primarch. The Lord of Death was a demigod set upon his path of revenge, and so he found little challenge in slaughtering the White Scars' offensive. Nevertheless, he only barely escaped in time before the Sword Storm erupted in a cataclysmic explosion, and within his personal chambers aboard the Endurance, he was simply left to seethe in rage. He had once again failed to kill the Khan, and now it seemed obvious that splitting his legion between himself and Callous Typhon had been an utterly foolish notion. If the bulk of the Death Guard had remained by his side, perhaps they would have achieved victory. But alas, that was not what destiny had in mind. Thus he sent an order to the Emperor's children commander, named as Eidolon, to find Callous Typhon and to bring the entirety of the Death Guard together once more, from where they would reform into an unstoppable tide, poised to seize the galaxy in the name of Horus. When the Primarch and his wayward captain finally reunited their fleets and conversed over Vox transmission, there was a distinct air of tension between them. Typhon appeared to be harboring a secret from his Gene father, and he was not shy in expressing his disappointment in the lack of progress made from the splinter fleet. Rather tragically, all born upon Barbarus had been forged amidst a war fought between father and adoptive son. They had witnessed Mortarion fight against the overlords for freedom, and his rebellion against the Emperor in many ways mirrored that ancient conflict. But perhaps it was no longer time for the Pale King to wage this war, and perhaps instead Typhon could claim victory where this decrepit fool could not. Thus, the first captain and master of the Death Guard began to orchestrate his grand endeavor, and should he be successful, then the entirety of the 14th Legion, including Mortarion himself, would be forever changed. With the galaxy roiling in the flames of civil war, Horus now believed that his time had come, and that Terra itself was a prize, ripe for the taking. As such, he sent his final dispatch to the traitor Primarchs, ordering them to collect their forces and to attack the Iron Cradle of Mankind, finally aiming to claim the skull of the false Emperor and to pledge all of humanity to the worship of the darker powers. As the Death Guard amassed their fleets, a rather curious shift had occurred in Callous Typhon. He had led the bulk of his legion for the prior years, earning their respect and loyalty, to the point where it seemed that many would rather follow his word than of their own Primarch. Strengthened by this newfound support, the captain was quick to send a dispatch to Mortarion, suggesting that the two convene upon the great barge of the Terminus Est, leaving the Endurance to be commanded by another captain of their legion. Reluctantly agreeing to this offer, the Pale King boarded his new vessel, standing face to face with Typhon for the first time in years. And yet, much had clearly changed. The Barbaran native had always been a powerful man, but now he seemed to have grown far more confident in himself, almost as if he had been reborn during his time away. But beyond this aura, he could hardly recognize the pallid face of his once trusted companion. Looking through the dense, time-worn skin, tinged with the sickly hue of rancid butter, he truly wished that somewhere beneath those hardened layers was his friend. Typhon, meanwhile, did not hold the same aspirations of kinship with the Great Reaper. Instead, he simply wished to manipulate and exploit his archaic notions of honor. Feigning respect, the captain suggested that the two should plan out their invasion of Terra from the Terminus Est. And then that they could lead the attack side by side, unified in purpose, as two reunited sons of Barbarus. At this point, Mortarion had already heard hushed whispers from his captains that the legion had grown fractured, with the forces under the leadership of Typhon growing more and more distant from those who had followed him against the White Scars. To quell these foolish thoughts, the Primarch agreed to his captain's plan, in the hopes that it would truly bring the legion together once more, and that once dusk finally fell upon Terra, that the 14th would stride together, unabashed by their prior divide. Whilst this would eventually come to pass, Mortarion could not have possibly anticipated the true intentions of his trusted captain. The Terminus Est, upon Typhon's instruction and Mortarion's word, slipped into the warp, emerging into the writhing hellscape that had given birth to the very gods of chaos themselves. Though this should have been a relatively simple journey, fate had seemingly intervened to bring destruction to the 14th. As they moved deeper into the hellish rift, tragedy finally struck. Though their Gela fields were indeed still functional, a colossal wave of Empyrean energy had somehow penetrated their ship, crippling entire cohorts of the Astartes and utterly obliterating many of the pathetic humans who scurried about in anguished panic. Mortarion, still in command, bellowed out for answers, answers which Typhon was all too quick to provide. He accused the entire repertoire of the psionic navigators as being spies for Malkador, and without asking for permission, he ordered for his own bodyguard of the Grave Wardens to slaughter the scions of the Navis Nobilitae, clearing their taint from the now stranded ship. Mortarion, obviously enraged at this act of insolence, snatched Typhon by his armor, once again demanding an explanation for this short-sighted act. But with a smile, the first captain claimed that he himself possessed the gifts of warp sight, and that through his own power could he lead the 14th through the storm. Rather than moving towards Terra, however, Typhon, now in command of the ship, steered the Terminus Est into a predestined trap. The great barge sailed in eerie silence, with Mortarion being forced to admit that perhaps this was the only way that they would make it back home. But as the hours bled into days, it soon became clear that all was not well within the confines of their ship. The first to fall was the young legionary named Azuriek. The cries for aid were distant yet sudden, prompting Mortarion to rush to its source, bursting into his chambers, wherein which he found a sight that could turn even the stomach of the sickly Primarch. It was as if someone had created a diseased parody of a marine. It was a cruel facsimile of biological perfection, no longer recognizable as a man, but instead as a weeping mass of death. His skin, now colored as a gray, writhing mass, stripped away and fell to the deck floors, oozing and wriggling with bloated maggots lashing around in the black pool of putrescent ichor. Broken bones, shattered under the weight of the warp, stuck outwards, no longer filled with marrow, but instead with minuscule, grasping hands. His foaming eyes, however, they were the worst. Those twin sockets, which previously harbored dark, piercing eyes, were now infested with squirming clutches of eggs, bursting to unleash swarms of wailing flies, wafting about as a near sentient cloud, occasionally diving downwards to feast on the grisly remains. And yet, Zurich still lived. It was impossible. How could this man, this Astartes, cracked open as though he had been dead for years, still endure such torture. His organs were molten pools of putrescence, his body a desecrated effigy of death itself. But somehow he still stirred upon the deck. He was dead and yet undying. Rushing back to the command deck, Mortarion confronted Typhon, demanding answers. And once more, the captain was all too prepared to provide them. With a dull shrug, he admitted that perhaps their enemies had sabotaged their craft with a virus, but that the most likely cause was that the warp itself had invaded and corrupted their ship. Enraged at his callous nature, the Primarch sent a vox call to the fellowships of his fleet, urging for his legion to steel themselves away from this horror, claiming that this so-called destroyer plague would not lead to the end of the Death Guard. But if only he had known the truth. Though he expected the various ship captains to respond with an affirmative call, there was one which had seemingly fallen into eerie silence. The great barge, named as the Cold Rain, did not relay any form of communication, but instead, it simply broke. Looking through the viewports, it was as if a great hand had seized the vessel, crushing and bending it into submission until finally it imploded inwards, leaving only a floating hulk of contorted ashen steel. Whilst the Primarch was understandably shaken, Typhon, it seemed, simply did not care. He turned face and walked away from his gene father, echoing out that the ship is dead. And from these words, Mortarion could not help but feel as though the mantle of command had slipped from his grasp, right into the tainted hands of callous Typhon. It was here that Mortarion finally took his ultimate stand against the growing treachery. He could no longer stand the snaking influences of Typhon, who had seemingly led his legion towards their own damnation, and if no action was to be taken, then it was plausible that all would be reduced into the same undying state as Zuriek. To begin with, he sought the mind of his once dead, now revived brother, Ignatius Grulgor, the Life Eater. Perhaps at first he desired aid, but the braying beast soon revealed that his true allegiances lay out in the warp, and that eventually all within the Death Guard would be forced to follow the same path as the corrupted Typhon. Nevertheless, this tainted being was still bound to the Primarch by an eternal oath, and so, with a sense of reluctance, he retrieved a small artifact which could be used to summon the Life Eater from these chambers. If his confrontation with the first captain proved to turn against him, then he could unleash this pestilent creature, all but guaranteeing the certain death of Typhon and the restoration of order to his legion. Sealing the maniacal marine away once more, Mortarion called for an assembly with his bodyguards of the Death Shroud, who were perhaps the only remaining members of the Legion who he could truly trust. And with sullen words, he ordered for them to accompany him to reclaim command of his vessel. It is said that in his last moments before leaving this chamber, that he looked down to his own hands, noticing a tiny, nigh imperceivable trio of welts formed into a sinister triangle of death. Venturing through the ship, Mortarion was now all too well aware of the extent to which the warp had tainted it. The Terminus Est no longer resembled the once mighty Imperial barge which it had once been. No interior wall was free from the oozing, weeping growths of great tumors, bleeding out a sickening slurry of cystic fluid, spilling onto the floors, coating them in an ankle-deep soup of decay. Every corridor, once contained by the sharp corners of their bulkhead, now twisted, forming a diseased labyrinth where all roads led directly to the command center. And it was here that Typhon lurked. As they moved deeper still, the grim remains of diseased marines could be found, face down in the bubbling muck, broken open, harboring the destroyer plague deep within their very souls. Some lashed out in madness, hoping to scream for aid, but no words rang out, as instead, swarms of flies would burst from their gaped mouths before diving back to sink themselves deep within the corrupted frame of those damned marines. As they reached the final pestilent doorway, the Primarch took pause. He turned his pallid head to his seven guards and simply stated that First Captain Typhon will do as he is ordered, or he will be put down. Though they did not speak, they saluted in the traditional Barbaran fashion, ever loyal to their true lord, being ready to put down their lives in the defense of the Pale King. As the chamber doors opened, the troop were engulfed by the smell of death. It was as though a wave of corruption had washed outwards, flooding their lungs in its putrescence, and yet it was somehow familiar to the Reaper of Men. This was not simply the air of disease, but instead, it was the scent of Barbarus. He knew not of how, but the sickening air of his adoptive father's mountain peak was within this room. Though it had once proven itself to cause his downfall, Mortarion was a changed man. He was no longer a child, and this suffocating atmosphere was not to bring him low once more. From its sickening cloud, however, did the new Lord of the Death Guard emerge. The man once named as Callus Typhon strode outwards as a ghost, his face resembling the pallid, sickly overlords of Barbarus more than anything else. As one final desperate plea, the Primarch beseeched to his former friend, hoping that somewhere beneath his sickness that the Barbaran still lived. And yet, the man who once stood at his side denied his request for compliance. Understanding that there could no longer be any hope of redemption, Mortarion raised his scythe and charged to slay his wayward brother. Though a Primarch indeed, Typhon was no longer a mere marine, as the powers of the warp had ascended him to a level which none had previously thought possible. The two exchanged deft, slicing blows, each parried with an otherworldly speed that could only have been brought about by the gifts of the warp. They grew closer with each passing moment, sparks flying as sharpened blade met with hardened armor, until finally, with one fatal blow, Mortarion embedded his scythe deep within his traitor captain's chest, splitting his twin hearts in twain. Any lesser man would have undoubtedly been killed from such an attack, but Typhon's death would not serve the wishes of the putrescent god of all plagues. At this climactic moment, the first captain defied death itself. His neck snapped upwards, eyes blaring with a putrid yellow effulgence, and through rotten, gnashing teeth, he asked the Primarch, "Did you really think it would be that easy?" But Mortarion had prepared himself for the sickening possibility that Typhon was no longer a mortal, and so he summoned forth an entity born from the warp to fell he who had embraced its touch. Ripping the small artifact from his belt, he took a gamble and called the demonic corpse of Ignatius Grulgor, the Life Eater, to manifest within this loathsome chamber, to finally fulfill his past oath and to slay Callus Typhon at long last. As the demon embraced the first captain, it soon became clear that this act, rather than assuring the Primarch's victory, would spell his certain defeat. With a wet, gurgling cackle, the demon roared out that he served only the ruinous powers, and so he craned his neck, exposing his bare throat to Typhon, and offered him with the gift of ascension. The first captain fell upon the demon, tearing its immaterial flesh from twisted bone, devouring its impossible essence, until the two exploded in a burst of otherworldly death. Mortarion himself was knocked back to the chamber floor by the sudden gale of writhing flies which poured out from that disgusting wound in reality, and whilst he himself could endure their swarm, his death shroud guards were far less lucky. They tore through the thick Terminator armor, feasting upon the uncorrupted marines from within until they finally collapsed to their own agonizing deaths. Arising from the storm was but one man. The first captain, Callus Typhon, looked down upon his struggling Primarch and simply stated that he was the herald of what would soon befall them, and in his new form that his name was Typhus. Stunned by that which he had seen, Mortarion could do little but look out in desperation as his own fallen Death Shroud Terminators arose from death. They were reborn as hunched, undying corpses, oozing with putrescent warp energy from their pocked armors as they moved to stand at the side of their traitor captain. At this sight, the Primarch of the 14th, savior of Barbarus and reaper of men, fell into the swirling ocean of the warp. He was nowhere. He was everywhere. He could feel his brothers and once trusted marines rising throughout their fleet, mirroring the sickening form of Typhus as they embraced the dark gifts of the destroyer plague. But suddenly he was no longer in the yawning abyss, and instead he lay upon the putrid mud of Barbarus. This time, however, the golden stranger who had stolen his victory over the overlords was no longer present, and instead it was a roiling entity of death. It was impossible to look upon, as though a true god of reality had affixed its gaze deep within his very soul. And from here, it uttered but a simple phrase: "Give your fealty to the grandfather." The sense of déjà vu was not lost on the fallen Primarch. He wished that he could have rejected the Emperor all those years ago, but he knew that he would have died and damned his brothers to a lifetime of servitude. And now, once more, though within his heart, he desired nothing more than to scorn this new deific figure of plague, he was fully aware that he could not. But this was not for him. This was an act to save his legion. As the cold hands of death gently cradled the pale king, and as his vision faded, he whispered out with his final vestiges of life, "I want to endure." With this plea, the foul muck of Barbarus faded away, revealing instead the far more putrid floors of the Terminus Est. He had survived, and he had indeed endured, but the cost was most terrible indeed. He felt his body contort and change, his bones shattered, joints tore apart, his flesh writhed and melted away, mixing with the foul black ichor of the craft. His twin hearts resumed in their function, but with each beat they no longer pumped blood, as instead he was filled with the plagues of Nurgle's rusted iron cauldron. Two colossal insectoid wings unfurled from his back, between which his own spine burst outwards, oozing with diseases never before seen in this plane of reality. Every broken part of his body swam through the muck, rebuilding and reforming, until he once more could stand amongst the undying. He was no longer a Primarch, but instead, Mortarion was now a demon prince, eternally pledged to serve Grandfather Nurgle until the end of time. Mortarion was the final member of the traitor Death Guard who embraced the gifts of Nurgle. But with this fateful action, he had reaffirmed his loyalty to the 14th, who would now see him once more as their true Lord of Death. The entire Legion had fallen to the deceptive corruption of Typhus, who himself still held a great deal of animosity towards his Primarch. Seeing him as a foolish weakling who had remained ignorant to the gifts of the warp for far too long. As their transformation ended, their stay within the warp did not need to last any longer than it already had. In the distant reaches of the Sol system, reality itself burst open in a sickening wave of putrescence. From its oozing wound, the great fleet of the Death Guard was vomited outwards, unleashing the unified and tainted Legion of Barbarus, who had now resumed in their ultimate task of overthrowing the yoke of the Emperor. Only this time, they would not do so with a sense of grim necessity. The Death Guard would not liberate the stars, but instead they would drown them in plague. Terror would only be the first to feel the gifts of Nurgle. And from their victory, would they set out on a pestilent warpath, bringing death and disease to all, until every single living creature could feel the touch of the eternal Plague Father. Thus ends our tragic tale on the rise and fall of the Legion of the Death Guard and of their pale king, the now ascended Demon Prince, once named as Mortarion. There are none who will be free from the inevitable maladies of disease, and yet, with the utter corruption of this harrowed figure, it now seems as though the plagues of Nurgle will reach farther than they ever could before. As it so stands today, within the chaos of the 41st millennium, the Death Lord has resumed in his warpath through the stars, leading the Death Guard on their dark crusade in the hopes that they may once more topple the Imperium, all for the glory of the Great Corruptor. The nefarious herald of Nurgle, Typhus, however, has entirely rejected the leadership of his once great Primarch. He has committed himself to leading his own warband, free from the taint of weakness brought about by Mortarion. And perhaps in time, through his own deeds, will he eclipse the might of the Primarch himself. But regardless, I do believe that we have come to our end. To each and every one of you, I thank you dearly for listening to this tale in its entirety, and I can only hope that the gifts of Nurgle simply exist within the realm of nightmares rather than reality. For now, however, I must once again depart. Thank you again for listening, and I wish you all a fond goodbye.